Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation cure master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today is being produced by Jack Inslee and sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards and Company, some of the greatest hams in the United States. We welcome you to contribute to our Twitter feed at HRN Updates. Call us at the studio at 718-497-2128 if you have any questions, or send us an email at info@heritagefoodsusa.com. So today, our State of Cheese series continues as we explore the world of cheese and dairy in Louisiana. With us today is Richard Sutton, owner of the St. James Cheese Company in New Orleans. Thanks for joining us, Richard. Are you there?
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Very good. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, great to have on. Thank you.
I remember I first met you, I think we opened our shops just right about the same time. And I met you at the Essex Market. So yeah, it's good to be able to connect again.
Yeah, no, it's always been one of my favorite places to visit in New York, although I don't get up there very often anymore, but yeah, it's a neat spot there.
Thanks. Yeah, that's the trouble about opening a business, right? Then you're like, okay, well, yeah, I used to do that. Used to travel. Used to get out.
I remember when.
Yeah. So when did you open your shop?
We opened our shop in 2000. What year is it now?
2006.
Okay. So 4 years ago.
Fantastic. And can you tell us a little bit about your business, how you started, your background, how you ended up in the world of cheese?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I guess maybe it's like a lot of people. It's sort of kind of a combination of accident and I don't know, general job dissatisfaction and that kind of thing. And it really goes back about 8 or 9 years or so. My wife and I had both had sort of professional careers. We were living in Philadelphia, and we decided that something that didn't really work out very well or didn't really fit very well for us, so we left our jobs and we decided to move to London, England, because my wife is a dual citizen, so we just decided that since we could, we'd just go over there.
Hey, why not?
See what would happen, you know?
And can I ask what you guys were doing in Philadelphia before?
Well, my wife was in public relations and I was in banking.
Okay.
And and we just, I don't know, you know, we had sort of the settled down in the house and all that kind of stuff, and it just, I don't know, we felt maybe we weren't quite ready for that, so.
Good for you.
We decided to introduce a little adventure, so we packed up and moved to London, and as we do when we tend to arrive at new places, we seek out the nearest cheese shop, and as it happened, the one that we went to was hiring, and we needed some work pretty quick, just because London's kind of expensive.
Yeah,
to be unemployed in. So,
and then you know, when you work at the cheese shop, you can usually, you know, get a little bit of cheese for free, which is always good.
Yeah, I mean, you get a little cheese for free. You certainly don't make a luxurious living at the cheese shops, but it at least helps pay the bar bills a little bit.
And can I ask what that cheese shop was?
It was a cheese shop called Paxton and Whitfield.
And oh, sure.
It's in St. James. It's not quite as globally famous as Neil's Yard, but it's a very old cheese shop. It's about 250 years old, something like that, in the smack dab in the middle of London, and it's a pretty cool little place. And,
is that the place that supplies Queen Elizabeth with all of her cheeses?
Right. We have, as a lot of businesses, particularly in that part of London, have, we had a couple royal warrants for both the Queen Elizabeth and the Prince of Wales, and in some ways it's sort of like any other professional relationship, really, that you might have with a chef or something like that. I mean, pretty much, it's a working proper commercial kitchen that has banquets and functions and things like that, and they need to get their cheese someplace. So as it happens, that's what they did. But it's a very old relationship that goes back into the 1800s, I think, like the 1870s or 1860s, something like that, when they started supplying the royal household, and had done ever since. And it was pretty exciting.
Wow. So did you ever cater any of their events while you were working there?
We didn't get to cater any, although we did. We also supplied cheese to the House of Lords, and they had an annual opening of that. I guess it was the opening or closing of Parliament, but anyway, it's there's basically, I think, 2 days a year when the Queen actually goes and speaks in front of Parliament, and it's called opening of Parliament or closing of Parliament. She sort of lays out her agenda, and it's sort of a lot of pomp and ceremony. But they have these big banquets there, and we were responsible for doing this great British cheese spread for all the members of Parliament to come and enjoy, and it was that was pretty cool. So we got a lot of fancy people there.
Wow, that's crazy.
But never the Queen. I never met the Queen in person, only her chef.
Well, hey, that's like way closer than like everyone else on the planet. So so you worked at Paxton and Whitfield for a little while, and then what happened next in your trajectory of cheese?
Well, you know, I guess to take it back like a step, one of the things that my wife and I had always entertained was the idea of moving back to New Orleans, where we both went to undergrad school. We went to Tulane, and we both wanted to go back to New Orleans, and New Orleans being a city of fairly limited businesses. I mean, you've kind of got the port and the hospitality industry and a few other things, law firms, but not a whole lot else. Neither of us could really figure out exactly what it is that we wanted to do if we would ever move back here. And as we were working at the cheese shop in London, it kind of dawned on us this idea that we would go back to New Orleans and open up a cheese shop, because one of the things that was always a little bit peculiar about New Orleans, a city that is renowned as a food lover's town, never really had anything like that. In fact, it doesn't really have any specialty food shops at all, and that's changing now, but it... you know, we'd always remembered from being at school and from years after that we'd go back and visit that there just really weren't a lot of specialty food shops, if any, in the city, and we thought that was a little bit strange. So that's we worked at this cheese shop, decided that we really rather enjoyed being in that business, and you know, it really just felt good for us, and that's when we started coming up with this plan to come to New Orleans and open up a shop.
Wow. So then, so you open your shop, and can you tell me a little bit about what kinds of cheeses and other products that you guys focus on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, other than a personal interest in cheese that I'd had for a long, long time, you know, my experience in cheese was defined largely by what I did at Paxton Whitfield and running that little shop there, and one of the things that that Paxton's did that was a little bit different from Neil's Yard, you know, and I would say that at least in London, you know, Neil's Yard and Paxton Whitfield and one other shop, the Fromagerie, were really kind of the best cheese shops in the city there. You know, Neil's Yard is this absolutely diehard, you know, traditional English farmhouse cheeses, and that's all they sold was, you know, a very select few English farmhouse cheeses. And much like I would say, you know, your model is up at your cheese shop in Essex. For us, because of the relationship that we had with the Royal Household and other wholesale relationships that we had, you know, we needed to sell a little bit of everything. We sold a lot of English stuff, and we were heavily English cheeses, but we had to sell other stuff too, just because that was what was demanded of us by our customers. And when I came to New Orleans, you know, I really entertained the idea of being a purely American cheese shop. But one of the things that, again, we took into consideration in opening up our business here was a need, I think, to service wholesale customers, because we didn't believe that there was enough volume. It was a big enough market here just to survive on retail alone.
And that's so interesting because, you know, you were mentioning being the only cheese shop in New Orleans. You would think that you would have, you know, that traffic would kind of come naturally. But well, we can talk about that in a second. But yeah, go on about your philosophy of
what we wanted to do was was to be able to approach you know, restaurant customers here and, you know, retail customers as well, and be able to find a way to capitalize on some of the things that I learned while working in the cheese business in Europe and learning about European cheeses, and bring some of that back here, as well as bring in some interesting American cheeses. And, you know, like I said, there wasn't a lot going on down here before we got here. So to some extent, you know, that was, you know, we were the first person. And I guess had we done one way or another, in retrospect, probably it would have worked out fine. But that was what we felt at the time. We felt that what people would want down here was something that was, you know, really just brought things from everywhere to New Orleans that people didn't have before.
Spreading the curd in New Orleans. So that's interesting. So you guys started off with a mission to not only be a retail shop, but to sell to wholesale customers. So that you guys are really kind of like cheese evangelists for the whole city then, because it's oftentimes through chefs that people first discover artisan cheeses, you know, when they go out to dinner. And so that's great. So your shop is really, you know, bringing a lot of cheese love and cheese education to New Orleans.
Well, that's what we really wanted to do. That, and we were very fortunate, I think, that we had a very, you know, welcoming and enthusiastic response from a lot of the chefs in town. You know, New Orleans has lots and lots of sort of single, you know, single location restaurants. You know, independent local, you know, guys that you know, chef owner operated kind of restaurants, and so they've got a lot of flexibility. And we really, like I said, we got a really strong and good reception from those guys, and a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of interest. And to me, I think as a cheesemonger in a market, like I said, that you know, they're just not that many people walking around that would have a need to walk into a cheese shop on any given day, just because of the density of population here. You know, we were concerned about the possibility of, you know, it's the ups and the downs. It's, if, you know, it's a quiet week and or a quiet couple weeks or a quiet month or whatever. I worried that we wouldn't be able to turn our inventory over well enough just on the retail business alone to be able to sustain the quality that I've, you know, that I wanted to offer.
Absolutely.
And that's why we really wanted to, I mean, it was part of the plan, and we didn't know if it was going to work, but it was part of the plan to approach these chefs to not only help us spread the word by putting, you know, quality cheeses on their menus, but also really as a partnership to help us keep our inventory turning over so that we can bring in fresher product, so that we can bring in more product, and thereby get better prices and a better selection. And it just kind of, it's a very natural partnership to me for a cheese shop in our environment, where there aren't a lot of specialty wholesalers, you know, or retailers of any kind in the area, you know, that's the kind of relationship that we wanted to build. And you know, that I don't think that works in every market, but we felt it would work in a market like New Orleans.
And so let me ask, who were some of the early adopters in the restaurant community for you guys?
Boy, you know, we had, I guess I'd say our first customer was a guy named John Harris.
Okay.
Whose restaurant in town, Lillette, is not very far from us, and one of, I think, a really excellent restaurant in town. He was probably our first customer, and Donald Link, who is perhaps better known outside of the city of New Orleans, Donald Link from Herb Saint and Cochon and a few other ventures, was a you know, in the door literally within a couple weeks of us opening.
Kind of isn't that amazing how chefs just restaurant.
I'm like,
sniff you
really?
Out?
Wow, you know. So
that's great. And so, but, oh wait, go on. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, but you know, it's sort of been a steady flow, and it's a very, you know, the city is a small city, and it's a very tight community. So in some respects, I think that helped word spread rather quickly, and you know, now we work with, you know, the Emeralds groups and John Besh and you know, Commanders, and most of the restaurants that people might have heard of outside of the city, you know, have at least at some occasion or another come and bought cheese from us. So that's been good for us.
So the plan is working. And let me ask you this. So how are your expectations met or exceeded, hopefully, by the retail side of things?
Well, I think in some respects, you know, one of the questions, the greatest fear that we had before we came here, and it was sort of a question that my dad put to me. He said, you know, there aren't any cheese shops in New Orleans. And I said, yeah, that's right. And he said, well, maybe there's a reason for that. And I said, oh, interesting. So, you know, our biggest fear was, what if we opened up and nobody came? And I would say in all respects, you know, the business has grown by a much greater degree than we ever expected it would, in this period of time that we've been open. We just didn't. It wasn't, you know, we turned out we were kind of way off the mark in our estimates, which was very good in some respects. Obviously, because you know we proved that there was something here that people were interested in. But it did, within a year of opening the business, we already realized that, you know, we just didn't design the business to operate the volume that we were having to do.
Wow.
And that's been very difficult for us over the last few years, is just trying to find a way to
keep
it all together and you know, grow the I guess I don't want to use a big word, but grow the infrastructure of our business at a pace that matches the growth of the business, you know, so that we're not, you know, overextending ourselves on the back end and then getting killed. So it's been a lot of trial and error, and we've had some really difficult months where we just have been really really struggling to keep up, and then we've had periods of time where, you know, we were able to buy the building that we're in, which was a great blessing. But you know, the first year after we did that was very difficult, because we had, you know, we took on a lot of expenses in doing that, and
sure,
you know, we're kind of waiting for the business to catch up. And so it's you know, it's introduced a lot of a lot of problems, you could say, that we didn't expect, but obviously I think, you know, you and I probably can agree that those, you know, being too busy is a lot better than being not busy enough.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we have to take a really short break, but when we come back, I want to hear more about your business and talk more about cheesemakers in Louisiana. So stick with us.
Sure.
On Cutting the Curd.
We'll be right back.
So we are back on Cutting the Curd. This is the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and today we are talking the state of cheese in Louisiana with Richard Sutton, owner of the St. James Cheese Company in New Orleans. So, Richard, can you tell us a little bit about cheese in Louisiana? Do you know how many cheesemakers there are in the state?
Well, to my knowledge, at this point, there are two. There was a third cheesemaker that existed before the hurricane. That for either reasons related to the hurricane or other reasons, anyway, disappeared after Katrina.
Okay.
So we've got two producers in the state, and then we've got one other producer in Mississippi that I guess you could kind of treats New Orleans as their home market, even though they're across the state line. The first one is one I'm sure some of your customers and you've probably heard of is Bittersweet Plantation Dairy.
Sure.
Which was owned by Chef John Fulce. And in fact, I think they were just in Culture Magazine this month. A big spread on some of the triple cream cheeses that they make.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, what they make, that fleur-de-lis and the
right.
The Gabriel.
Fleur-de-lis, fleur-de-tèche, Gabriel, Evangeline, they all tend to be names that are, you know, of some significance or another to our part of the world down here. And they're really nice cheeses. Now, they don't keep any of their own, they don't produce their own milk. They buy in their milk.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a really nice job with the cheeses they make, and there's a couple that are a little maybe less known outside the area. He makes a blue cheese called Bayou Blue, which is really wonderful. It's kind of a Maytag-y kind of style of cheese, but really tasty.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And then he makes a couple like a cashcaval and some feta. And then what we see a lot of down here is the yogurt. They do a lot of yogurt. And it's all really nice stuff, really good quality product. And fairly widely available, I think, around the country. I mean, certainly in New York, there's got to be people that have it up there, I'm sure. But a really nice nice cheese. And he's sort of the biggest of the operations, I would say.
Yeah.
Our other local cheesemaker is Belle Ecorse Farms. And it's run by a woman named Wanda Barris.
Uh-huh.
And she has a small herd of goats, and she's a really wonderful unique personality. She has all these little businesses that she's in, and she keeps goats and she makes goat cheese, but she also sells like exotic birds and does all these other things. But her goat cheese is really nice, and she makes it seasonally. And the vast majority of it she sells at the Baton Rouge Farmers Market, because that's kind of closest to where she is. But we get a little bit of it in the shop here from time to time. Really nice. Most of what she does is some fresh, fresh goat cheeses that she flavors with herbs from her own garden.
Mm-hmm.
But she does a couple of ripened varieties as well that are, I guess you could say, sort of French style varieties of mold ripened goat cheeses. Very tasty, but I think her fresh stuff is the best stuff that she does. It's really really elegant and interesting flavors and natural and just beautiful. And then the folks in Mississippi are the Ryles dairy.
How do you spell Ryles? Is it
Ryals?
Okay.
And they do both goats and cow's milk cheese, but they're really best known for their goat's cheese, and they've just started producing. They make a lot of sort of fresh chevs, but they've just recently started producing a raw goat's milk cheddar, they call it. They haven't actually christened it with a with a more distinctive name than that, so they just call it the goat cheddar. And it comes in these sort of 10 or 12 pound wheels, and it's really fantastic. It really is fantastic stuff, and we've just started. They've just started it this summer, and we've been selling it in the shop for a while now, and it's a really wonderful cheese, really wonderful, and we've enjoyed kind of getting to know those guys as well, and a lot of times people come in and ask us for local cheeses, and we have unfortunately a relatively short list. Beyond that, we have to go pretty far away before we start getting into more cheese production. So
now, what about Creole cream cheese?
Creole cream cheese is a funny thing, you know, and that's a lot of the dairies in town, the Smith Creamery, which doesn't make cheese, but they make, you know, milk products and cream and Creole cream cheese, as does John Folsom and a variety of other producers, make this stuff called Creole cream cheese, which, of course, the first day we opened, people come in and says, oh, you sell Creole cream cheese? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
You're like, I've been in London for 5 years. I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's try something else. But, you know, I kind of got to know what it is. It's one of these things that, you know, you serve it. It's I guess you could say it's sort of somewhere between like a mascarpone and a creme fraiche kind of thing. You know, there's all those sort of fresh, cheesy kind of products like creme fraiche and fromage blanc and, you know, like Philadelphia cream cheese, all those products that, you know, various forms. And Creole cream cheese is one of them. And so, you know, after getting some of this stuff in and trying it, it's quite good. But you have to have it when it's absolutely fresh. We started selling it a little bit in the shop. And people would come in and they'd say, do you have any Creole cream cheese? I was like, as a matter of fact, we do. It's like, oh, that's awesome. You know, I love that stuff. Of course, I make my own. And I was like, oh, okay, so that's fine. Well, that's great. And I had to be honest, we don't sell it anymore because literally everybody that would come in and ask for it would ask for it. They would look at the box and they'd say, well, you know, I make my own.
That's amazing. I mean, I feel like that is so rare, especially because, you know, I feel like maybe people's grandmothers might have made varieties of fresh cheese, you know, back, you know, 50 years ago. But to still have people making cheese at home, that's really rare. I haven't heard of that kind of a tradition really anywhere else. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, no, it is cool. And, that's one of the things that we really, really loved about the city of New Orleans and really were excited about coming back here is that there are people like that. And you know, the food traditions in Louisiana and southern Louisiana and New Orleans run very deep. I mean, people take, you know, have their own little family rituals and processes that they do that, you know, they will, you know, never let go of. And it seems that one of those processes is making Creole cream cheese. So we don't actually sell it, but you know, we've had it from time. Every once in a while, we'll get a little bit in, but it's good stuff.
Is there a specific kind of time of year that the Creole cream cheese comes out more than others, or is it kind of just a staple throughout the year?
People really dig on it when during strawberry season. Strawberry season is kind of a big deal in Louisiana. People get very excited about strawberries, so we see a lot more people asking about it during that time of year. So
cool, very cool. And well, so I wanted to, yeah, let's talk a little bit about food traditions and maybe dairy traditions in Louisiana. I mean, obviously, the French had a greater influence in Louisiana than probably anywhere else in the country. But it seems like there hadn't been too great of a history of dairy in the state, which I guess makes sense because it seems like the most of the land is sort of on the swampier side. But do you know about, I don't know, did the French have any influence? Are the food traditions of Louisiana sort of geared towards cheese in any specific way, or did it kind of take a different form?
Well, that was a question that we had. We wondered about that because if you look at the typical menu and restaurant today, or I should say before we opened anyway, but if you look at a typical restaurant menu in New Orleans, cheese was just not a feature. I mean, that was not something that was as a menu item. Certainly, a lot of recipes in New Orleans, including many famous ones, incorporate particularly Parmesan, but sometimes other cheeses. But it's not something that people think of as a standalone kind of thing. And in fact, I asked John Fulce about that, and John Fulce is, among other things that he does, he really has taken on the role of native food historian. And if you've seen any of his cookbooks, they're as much history books as anything. And I asked him, I said, why is there not a greater cheese tradition in the city or in southern Louisiana with the Spanish and the Italian and the French all having significant contributions to the culture here? Why'd they leave the cheese behind? You know, and he didn't really have an answer for it, but he said the two things that I think contributed to it. One was the fact that the food. Food culture here is heavily involved around seafood because
of
proximity to the Gulf, as you would expect.
Yeah.
And a lot of pork because they were easy to keep in the climate and the terrain that we have, and not quite as heavily into dairy, but of course there are dairy cattle you know, located around the city now. But also he said as a being the port that it was, a lot of times what, you know, the cheese was just brought into the port and they didn't make it locally and they just brought it in. They used to import it. They'd import the wheels of Parmesan and other things. And it never really caught on as something to do as a local business. I mean, the climate would just make it difficult. But again, I always find that a little bit of a stretch because you think about, you know, the climate in southern Italy is pretty darn hot there, and northern Italy it's hot, and southern France it's hot, and Spain is hot everywhere. So it's, you know, it seems like it's something that could have been done, but just I think by virtue of the you know, people that were coming here early that didn't have the access to, you know, mountainous terrain in which to build caves to ripen cheese in, or whatever it is, turning to seafood exclusively, it just never grew here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, seafood and pork, it's very rare to see those served with cheesy, you know, accompaniments of any kind.
They really don't. And, you know, as you know, I of course put cheese on absolutely everything and anything I can think of, but you know, I always sort of marvel that how the you know, Italians would really turn up their nose at the idea of putting cheese on top of any kind of seafood dish. I mean, they just don't do it. You don't put cheese on top of a seafood pasta or risotto or something. It is not something that's done. Of course, I do it all the time because I like cheese on everything. But you know, I guess it just didn't fit. But now you know, you go around and you see a lot of cheese incorporated into, you know, many famous dishes in town. You know, oysters, Rockefeller, and those kinds of things all have Parmesan.
Okay.
Parmesan in it, but it never was something that was an indigenous thing. And it still isn't. I mean, there are very few, very very limited cheese production anywhere in the Gulf South. I mean, there are a few, but not many.
Yeah, I was wondering. You know, we were talking with Alice Birchineau of Sweet Home Farm a couple weeks ago when we were talking about.
Yeah, well, there's one. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, and we were talking about the Southern Cheese Guild, and I was wondering if there was, or the Southern Cheesemakers Guild. And I was wondering if there's any kind of association for dairy at all in Louisiana that would sort of be similar or complement that.
Not that I'm aware of, but I do know that a lot of a number of the chefs in town are involved in the Southern Foodways Alliance, which kind of draws in everything, but not something that is specifically dairy only. At least not that I'm aware of.
Mm-mm. Okay, but yeah, no.
And Sweet Home Farm is funny too, because they you know, again, that was something that people asked us about from day one, and I'd not heard of them. And they don't wholesale; they sell whatever they do.
Yeah, no.
Through the front door, pretty much.
I know they have the most unique business model I've ever encountered. So let's see. I don't know. What about raw milk in Louisiana? Can you? I know the rules vary from state to state. Can you buy it in stores in Louisiana?
No, we're strictly a pasteurized milk state. That's, having said that, obviously, you know, raw milk cheeses are permitted to be sold, but both John Folse and Wanda pasteurize all their cheese. The Ryles do not pasteurize. They make that raw milk cheddar that they're able to sell, but they're not able to sell their raw, fresh goat's milk, although we've often inquired sort of if they could arrange anything on the DL, but so far we haven't gotten any of that in either.
Yeah. Goat milk is so delicious.
Yeah. No, it really is, and their goat's milk is absolutely wonderful. And there's a fellow that works in the shop here with us that's made some cheeses with their, you know, some little goat cheeses with their milk on his own. And there are a few chefs in town actually that make some cheeses with the Ryles goat milk that they serve in their restaurants, but all with the pasteurized stuff, not with anything raw.
Oh, that's interesting. So would you guys ever consider making cheese in-house, or is that kind of out of the question? Are you more just on the retail and wholesale side of things?
Well, you know, it's something that people ask us about all the time. I mean, given our name, a lot of people, you know, assume that we manufacture cheese, and we don't. And
because the full title is St. James Cheese Company?
Company, yeah.
Yeah.
We just liked the way that sounded, but it's obviously very confusing to people. But it's something that you know, I think it's something that I would see us doing in the future. As I said before, when we opened and things kind of were much busier more quickly than we expected. What I had thought was an abundance of cold storage when I opened the place, rapidly turned into
a
not.
Shortage.
And actually, it was probably only about 10 days ago now that we finally opened up. I don't say opened up, but switched on our first expansion into cold storage. We basically overnight probably tripled the amount of our cold storage space here.
Congratulations. I know what that feels like,
I've seen your cave, and sometimes that's got to bother you. At Christmas time, I wonder, which always scares me when I look at that thing in the last couple Christmases, I was like, I can't go through that
How
again.
How can we do it? Yeah.
So we've got this, we now, as of very, very recently, now have all this space, and we're still kind of tweaking the environment to try and make it work the way that we want, but you know, we were actually talking to our Bill Riles about, you know, getting a little bit of milk over here and playing around with it, but I think we'll wait till we get to the other side of the holidays before we do too much of that.
That sounds like a good plan. Well, we'll have to have you back on the show, you know, in 6 months or a year, and see where everything has progressed. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I just want to thank you so much. I mean, I feel like I really did learn a lot about Louisiana food traditions, and it's wonderful to hear how you guys got started and your amazing success since. So we will hopefully have you back on the show very soon.
Great. Well, thanks, Anne. Thank you very much for asking us on the show. We've all enjoyed listening to it over the years, so it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure. And actually, before you go, will you give everyone your website so they can find you and learn more about your wonderful business?
Absolutely. So our website is pretty easy. It's www.stjamescheese.com. And there's lots of pictures and information on there, and there's even a link that you can follow through and click and buy stuff. But stjamescheese.com, and if you want, send us an email and ask us anything you like.
Fantastic. Well, we will be back next Sunday with another episode of Cutting the Curd. And for now, this has been the State of Cheese in Louisiana. Thanks.
Thanks.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.